listening to a program produced in 2010 as part of Aloud, a series of dynamic lectures, readings, performances, and discussions that take place in the Mark Taper Auditorium at the historic downtown Central Library in the heart of Los Angeles. These programs are presented by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles, which supports the Los Angeles Public Library. To learn more about Aloud, please go to our website, www.aloudla.org. Tonight's panel is called Reweaving the Social Fabric of Skid Row, and we're going to hear from some of the social and artistic visionaries who have contributed to that reweaving. The program, as I said, is presented by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles, and it's co-presented with the Los Angeles Poverty Department. So after our panel, individual presentations and panel discussion, we'll be opening up to you, and we'll circulate a mic. We'll call on you, and please do wait until it comes to you as we record for podcast. I'm going to introduce both our first speaker as well as the evening's moderator, who will then briefly introduce the rest of our panel, which includes Clyde Casey, Manuel Compito, Jeff Dietrich, and Pete Can. I'm actually wearing Clyde's harmonica bracelet. Life will never be the same. Our moderator tonight is Dr. Maria Rosario Jackson. She's a senior research associate in the Metropolitan Housing and Community Center at the Urban Institute in Washington, D.C., and director of the Institute's Culture, Creativity, and Communities program. She has a very wonderful string of accomplishments. Her research focuses on urban policy, neighborhood revitalization, and comprehensive community planning, the politics of race, ethnicity, and gender in urban settings, and the role of arts and culture in community. And we're very fortunate to have her here tonight from D.C. And then our first speaker, the illustrious John Malpied, who in 1985 founded the Los Angeles Poverty Department. I'm sure many of you are familiar with LAPD. Let's give them a round of applause. You'll be hearing more about their projects tonight. LAPD's mission is to create performances that connect lived experience to the social forces that shape the life and communities of people living in poverty. John directs, performs, and engineers multi-event arts projects that have theatrical, installation, public art, and education components. And he's produced projects all over the world. He's a recipient of many awards, and it's been a really deep honor and pleasure to watch his work evolve over the years. So without further ado, please welcome John Malpied to tell you more about tonight and the LAPD. Thank you.
I'm a little unclear. Did we see the three-minute video or not?
No, we haven't seen the video. We saw the
video. Okay. Okay. So, yeah, Louise was actually one of the first people ever to come visit LAPD down in, on 544 South San Pedro in on a date. Yeah, you were the only one of the first people to visit on a date. So you should talk to her more about that later. Yeah, I started LAPD in 1985, and I was LAPD, yeah, is a theater group based in Skid Row for people who are in Skid Row to tell about the original. Some of the original goals were to create community on Skid Row and get the real deal out to Normalville. So those have sort of continued to be the goals because There was a community on Skid Row. There continues to be a community on Skid Row, and it's a community that's sort of exploding with vitality and efforts coming from people living on Skid Row. But then, as now, that the reality of the situation there has been oftentimes misrepresented for various reasons. So we thought, you know. Then we thought, well, you know, if people are in fact interested in social issues and want to solve things, then maybe they should actually, you know, find out what's really going on, and then they might be solving what needs to be solved rather than something that was imagined. You know, more recently during the real estate boom, you know, I've been down there. Like, you know, Broadway is definitely part of Skid Row. You know, here, you know, Hill Street, you know, the Grand Central Market, people go there. That's part of Skid Row. The library, people use the library. Well, this is part of Skid Row, you know, but there's been a concerted effort over time to shrink the geography and to create sort of two different kind of areas, not one with a lot of dimensions, but two that have very different contours and sort of rules, yeah. So as that's intensified over the last since the real estate bubble, more and more of LAPD's work has focused on the efforts of other people who are really doing a lot, either socially and artistically, to in that community and to sort of get that word out. So that's sort of what this. Project is about. And over the last 4 or 5 years, we've been doing a series of projects, including a gallery exhibition, to sort of identify, and a lot of community conversations, to identify different efforts and people that are doing things on Skid Row. So we have a little video of 3 minutes, I think, about that museum, temporary museum, and maybe we should see that. So we have time for that? Okay. I think there is sound on the video. The here we go. Oh, maybe not. Well, this was installed in Chinatown, and it was a exhibit that included that map on the floor showed sort of the shrinking dimensions of Skid Row as parts of it were appropriated by other neighborhoods, and there were a series of actions that were both political and art actions. This is one from L.A. Can. The tent was from David Bush, who's over in the corner here tonight, and in the audience. And there was a timeline of Skid Row, and a lot of and these were studies for a public art component of the project that we're going to do, which is to make portraits of some of the people who have done the visionaries who have done stuff on Skid Row. Both because of their efforts, but just sort of as surrogates for everybody else who's doing stuff, and hopefully we're going to be able to add to this over the years. So the people who are continuing to do stuff like Melvin Johnson and Earl Anthony and people like that who are over there, they can be added to that. And this is Kevin Michael Key performing on the street about. Skid Row being one of the biggest recovery communities around. This is Oscar Harvey playing the harmonica. So we brought together people to talk about policy and what's going on in the neighborhood, but also a lot of art events at the same time. So there's Tony Parker reading a story about David Bush's political action. There's David Bush. Tony Parker went with us to Bolivia, fell in love. He's living in Bolivia. We hate that, but we're happy.
We love Tony.
This is Michelle Autry, who's a poet and exciting person in the community. And she's reading a poem about gentrification, I think. And this is the gospel choir from the Church of the Nazarene, Central City East Community Church. But that's really better with sound. you can't beat it with sound.
We could probably show it with sound at the end. Henriette's going to go get another copy of it, so
okay.
Probably try and show it with sound at the end.
Okay, so anyway, we did all that because we wanted to. We're working with the arts. We're working to do a public artwork about these different some of the to identify some of the people, and we're going to do a traveling performance that's going to go through the streets from like where OG works, where there'll be a little scene about OG, to where Jeff works, where there'll be a little scene about Jeff, to where Pete works, there'll be a little scene about Can, to where Clyde Casey's Another Planet was, and a bunch of other places, and hopefully we'll have a marching band and maybe a Clyde Casey drum machine, populated by many people going down the street. And so that's the context for hearing about what everyone's doing.
So good evening. I like people who respond. Good. I have the pleasure of introducing our speakers this evening. I wanted to thank John and Louise for including me in this panel, which I think is going to be very interesting and really important. It's an opportunity to take a look at a place that often isn't viewed as a community from a number of different perspectives, from people who have for years been working to build community in this area. So it's our privilege to hear from our four speakers today. And I'm going to introduce first Clyde Casey, who is a visual artist and musician. He makes large, movable drum sculptures and uses them to create participatory musical events. And Clyde has some history in the Skid Row area. In 1988, at the corner of Wall and Boyd Streets, the site of a former gas station and parking lot, Clyde created Another Planet. And this was an outdoor cultural space where you could find poetry, ping pong, chess, TV, live music, and jam sessions by and for the people of the community 24 hours a day. Next to him is Pete Wilson.
White.
Pete White. Sorry, Pete.
That was a big one.
Oh,
sorry,
that's
Pete.
A bad one.
Didn't mean
that's
to
a
do
bad
that.
One.
Oh, yeah.
We
did not invite
You'll
Pete
never
Wilson.
Recover from that
yeah,
one.
Sorry. Didn't mean to do that.
I've been called worse. Don't worry about it, Maria.
It's Pete White. Who in 1999,
oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, it's Pete White, who in 1999 founded LA Can to ensure that people living in poverty have voice, power, and opinion in the decisions that impact their lives. And LA Can builds indigenous leadership within the Central City East community to build the multitude, to address the multitude of problems faced by homeless and very low-income residents of the community. And this includes civil rights, housing on the streets, and in hotels. Next is Jeff Dietrich, and Jeff was a co-founder in 1970 with Catherine Morris of Los Angeles Catholic Worker, which is a lay Catholic community of men and women that operates a free soup kitchen, hospitality house for the homeless, AIDS ministry, hospice for the dying, a newspaper, and regularly offers prophetic witness in opposition to war making and injustice. And then at the end, we have OG, also known as Manuel Compito. And Manuel Compito is a native LA artist and has devoted his creative energy to spreading a self-help philosophy. His organization, OGs in Service, is an association that dedicates itself to uplifting men and children of Skid Row. And each is going to talk for about 5 minutes about the work that they do in the community. And they've been asked to share from their perspective, how the work that they do actually builds a community in the Skid Row area. We're going to go for 5 minutes each, and then we're going to have a discussion among the panelists themselves, and then we'll open it up to a conversation with you. And we're actually going to go in an order of who's had longest affiliation with the community. So we're starting with Clyde Casey.
I believe it.
With Jeff.
Jeff.
Why do I have one here? Okay, we're starting with Jeff. And Jeff, if you could share with us.
Thank you. Let me say, first of all, I am really, really just delighted to be here in this space. It's such a beautiful space. And I work with the homeless. We've worked with the homeless for 40 years. But I want to say that the work we do with the homeless has no comparison to the work that the LA Library does for the homeless. This is a magnificent refuge for the poor and homeless of this city who spend so much of their time imbibing in the materials of the LA County Library. The people that I meet on Skid Row are some of the best self-educated people I've ever met. They read every single newspaper that is published. Well, they read the LA Times, the New York Times, and the San Francisco Chronicle, and the Wall Street Journal, and they can tell you what's going on in this world. And so I just want to say how proud and happy I am to be here, and just please support your LA Library. Thank you. All right.
Amen. Amen.
I'm with the Los Angeles Catholic Worker. I've been with the Catholic Worker for 40 years. Nobody on Skid Row has ever heard of the Catholic Worker. They all call us the Hippie Kitchen. And they call us the Hippie Kitchen because it was started by a bunch of hippies. I was a hippie. If you can believe it, I used to have long hair down to my shoulders. And you know, I think maybe one of the reasons, maybe the only reason that I'm here as part of this panel is because we are the first non-institutional service on Skid Row. We're the Catholic Worker. We're just a community of people. It's a pretty humble operation. It's pretty small budget. We probably operate, we're operating on less and less these days, but it's around under $200,000 a year. And the biggest supporters of our operation are the 12 people that live in community and run full-time the Catholic Worker for room and board and $15 a week, and that's what we get paid. And so the money that comes to us goes directly to the poor. And it goes directly to the poor in the form of mostly food and shelter. But let me just say... you know, the question on the floor is, how does your group promote community? And I want to say that, you know, unlike the other folks in this group, community is a byproduct of what we do. We serve food. We serve a lot of food. We serve about 3,000 meals a week. But I believe that community is intrinsic to the serving of food, to the serving and providing of food, that the sitting down and sharing of food is the actual beginning of community. So that's what I think we do. And in that process, we sit down with the poor, we listen to the poor, and we listen to stories from homeless folks and the people and residents that live in the Skid Row neighborhood, and we try to figure out what's going on and see if there's any other way that we can help them out. So among the ways that we've tried to help people out, in addition to our food service and the hospitality that we offer to a few people who come and live with us in our home, we have a free medical clinic. We have a free dental clinic. But I think one of the best things we do is we have a service desk. It's like nothing else. The person that operates the service desk, if you go there and you need your pants sewn up, she's got thread and needle. If you need an aspirin, if you need a vitamin, if you need a pair of scissors. In fact, that was a little bit of a discussion. Maybe some people in the Skid Row community shouldn't have scissors. if you need a Band-Aid... almost anything conceivable that a person on the street wants, you can get at our service desk. Ann Bowden is the person that provides that. What I want to say is that that we are a non-institutional operation. We try to create a human space. So we have a soup kitchen, but by the way, if anybody wants a really great date, come to our soup kitchen, because we have this most beautiful garden with trees and flowers and birds and goldfish. And it is, in fact, oftentimes the people who eat at our soup kitchen will come up to me and say, "Hey, you know, this is really a cool place. You could charge people money for this. You could make money off of this." And that's what, you know, that's exact. We don't want to make money off of it, but what we want to do is invite people into a place where they feel human and welcome, and where it's a beautiful respite, like the county library here, that they feel human and valued. And the desire is to restore people to their humanity, for if only for a little bit. And so we hope that it looks a little bit like a fancy restaurant in Malibu, a spa in the mountains. That's the desire that, and people often, they get that feeling when they come to our kitchen. Our desire is to treat people like human beings and to create this space where they can, where people can act more humanly with each other. So that's the foundation of what it means, what for us, what it means to be community, is to serve a meal and to greet people in a beautiful, hospitable space and make them feel human. Then we can find out how better to serve them. Then we can find out, well, we already know. We walk around. We know what's going on. We hear the stories, and we try to intervene as best we can. So we have been active to stop the injustices that happen with regard to the new civic project of arresting homeless people. But in the past, we've been active also in... I was just reading John Malpied's paper that he wrote about Skid Row and Maria. Yes, just that, you know, we were one of the first, we're kind of an anchor, and other groups came, and so we founded the Inner City Law Center, which is still there, which helps people solve their legal problems. John was one of the first employees for Inner City Law Center. He got his first job there. We also were instrumental in getting Alice Callahan to locate to Skid Row, Nuestra. Oh.
That was just a warning. If you want to finish, you can
just
go ahead and finish.
That Alice and myself have worked actively to be a force to create to secure low cost housing for the folks in Skid Row. That we were among the first to start that project to try to keep that as a reality. The very lowest cost housing in the city is in Skid Row, and half of that housing at this time is in the hands of two nonprofits, which are doing a good job of providing housing for the poorest of the poor in our city. So anyway, I'll stop there.
Thank you. Clyde Casey is going to share with us next.
Way back in the later 80s, 88, 89, actually before that, I was involved with a theater called the Wallenboy Theater, which was an avant-garde theater that was very involved with a lot of experimental kind of ideas from the stage. And about the time they were closing, I saw an old gas station across the street, and I had been noticing it, and it was available. And I thought I'd pretty much just start fixing it up. And I rented the place, and I started putting out pianos and chessboards, and I carved into wood. I got trained termites that nibble away for 14 minutes and 53 seconds, carve a sign. And I got a business license on the place as Another Planet. Appropriately, April the 15th, 1988. And the first sign I carved, of course, was Welcome Visitor to Small Planets. And right up underneath it was No Shirt, No Shoes, No Problem. And then as time went on, I carved a sign that's Later Than You Think. And I put out a lot of ways for people to be able to interact. You provide the tools and people will come in and they will interact. And I put out a lot of chessboards. One of the first things I put out was the pianos and then the chess, and I built a stage for poetry. And I began to do like a miniature library, and art easels and things like that came about. And so the local community started coming and mixing and mingling. And I had things that I would sell. I had a little gift shop. Everything was priced in pennies. So if you wanted a harmonica, it was 500 pennies. You have to figure it out. And accordions for 2,000 pennies and a little toy cash register. And then I served coffee for a dime on a silver platter. So this was all for people in the local area. And it turns out that the local area, of course, was the homeless population. Well, what happened is through music and chess and poetry and all this, you had the local art community mixing and mingling, and you had people out of City Hall mixing and mingling, and it was open 48 hours a day, days a week. And it was all about energy. It was all about people being able to get to know each other through analog ways of interacting. And the goal that I had for Another Planet when it came to the community outreach was that every 12 blocks, there ought to be a cultural communication center open at all times where people can mix and mingle without money interfering with your time being there. You go anywhere. You go anywhere in the world and you got to pay for your space. You got to pay to be there. You have to pay at Another Planet. You just go there and just be. And every 12 blocks, I saw that basically it was like a cosmic general store, and people really need that. We're in a plastic society. We're in a Walmart society. We're in a society of mini malls, and there is no hiding place. There is no place that will hide away, a home away from home. And that's what the world needs. It really needs the general store, but it needs it in a very surreal way. In a surreal way that's grounded in the real. I would play classical music in an environment that was filled with chaos. And yet in the morning, I would play classical music, but then in the morning, I'd put on George Carlin's The Wonderful World of Wino. W-I-N-N-O, Wino. And I would play like comedy things, stuff like that. But I really see that, in fact, I saw that when it came to the community outreach, if there was every 12 blocks basically Another Planet or a communication center, they could all be linked with a teleconferencing where each 12 blocks or each miles and miles away or from one state to another can all be communicating through a large teleconferencing screen. And that would really be about the only electronic. I mean, you might have like computers, but really the only thing that computers do, and it's like they do have their value, but people get locked in on that. And the bottom line of a communication center that's real is where people are locked in on the person across from them, a real, real human interaction. And that's what was going on at the time. And unfortunately, there was a fire and there was a setback. And it's very possible that something like that could be happening again in the future. Currently, I'm out of town. I'm living in Roswell. And I'm looking to create another planet in Roswell. I've been there for the last 4 weeks researching the area. So that's pretty much what was going on at that time. And I've come back to L.A. to reconnect with L.A. in some shape, form, or fashion and to see what could really happen in the Skid Row area to take it to the next level. And there's a lot of possibilities in the area, but in order to really bring about a sense of balance in the area, you've got to have an environment that just like is welcoming, and something that like when you look at the Disney building, you're just going, you're in awe. Well, something like that could be in the Skid Row area, but it doesn't have to be all real fancy. It could be very, very rough and rugged, but with a lot of art, and especially outdoors. It's like there's a lot of wonderful things going on in the world indoors, but if you've got a building and you've got a lot of things outdoors, and you're walking down the sidewalk and you see somebody playing the piano or playing chess or ping pong or doing their spoken word on the stage, or they're reading a book and this kind of stuff, out in the open, it's like somebody's front porch, and you go like, wow, you know, and this is the neighborhood, and that's what, and the place has to have so much surreal, so much abstract art that you're going like, yes, because what you want in real energy is you want your hair to stand on end, you want chill bumps to go up and down your spine, you want real energy, you don't want stuff that's just like sweet and nice, you really want, in order to bring about the disenfranchised in an environment where it's chaotic, then they're going to go, yeah, when they see something that's just like really gets their attention, then they will want to be there. And if they want to be there, then it's their home away from home. And then then you can have other organizations come down to be able to provide in an environment where they want to be there and not only there for whether it be the handouts. They're there because they feel great. It's real energy. And that's what that was about.
Thank you. And next, we're going to hear from Pete White.
So I'm going to warn you now, Maria, you might as well get the bell ready, because definitely not going to be able to finish in the 5 minutes. And if I leave everyone hanging, maybe we can catch up later and I could finish the story at that point. So, yeah, I am Pete White from the Los Angeles Community Action Network. Operative word there, community. I know the question was about our contribution to the community. But when I got it, the question via email from John, it was about my contribution to the community. And it was interesting because two things was interesting. First, today is my birthday, and usually on my birthday, I'm somewhere fishing and reflecting. And so what's going to happen now is I'm going to share those reflections with y'all, if that's all right.
Yeah.
And so And in sharing the reflection, I have to really talk about the journey that led my being in downtown Los Angeles. So I'm a native of Los Angeles. I grew up on 27th and Hooper. We used to come downtown Los Angeles in the 70s to do our shopping. African Americans came from what we call the East Side on 27th and Hooper to come to the movies, the Tower of the State, to shop at Newberry's, to hang out at Clifton's. I didn't know, however, that east of Broadway there was a city when I was a kid. Who knew? Who knew that there was a city of other people, the other LA, I would like to call it, existing? As I grew older, my cousin Herman was dealing with, like so many other Americans, dealing with substance abuse issues. And someone from the neighborhood found me and said, Pee-wee, that's my neighborhood name. I saw your cousin down on Skid Row. And, of course, I was like, Skid what? It was like Skid Row. And I was like, so where is Skid Row? They were like, downtown. And they sort of pointed me to where Skid Row exists. This was a few months after the riots. And let's be very clear, they were riots. All those other names that they call them in the 90s, no, they were riots. So it was a few months after the riots, and I came downtown to explore to find my cousin. I didn't find my cousin in 1992. There were too many people who looked like me. You know, when I walked the streets looking for my cousin, I saw my mother, I saw my father, I saw my cousin, but just not the cousin I was looking for. And then when I looked around, everywhere I looked, I saw like all of these corporate towers. Anywhere that you're laying on Skid Row, you saw like Deloitte and Touche, and you saw the Arco building and the Arco Plaza. But then you had this poverty that just existed in the shadows. And if you found yourself on the right block around town, you looked down toward Temple Street, you would see City Hall. And for me, it was like, how in the hell, with all of this opulence and all of this wealth, are my folks allowed to exist this way? That was my question that day. I didn't find my cousin that day, but about a month later, someone called me and said my cousin had been shot on 5th and Crocker. 5th and Crocker. And it's interesting when I share this piece of the story is something that Michael Key always says. He always says this is the largest recovery community. It is now, and it always has been. So we got the call. My cousin had been shot because he was attempting to recover in a program, the Salvation Harbor Light, the Salvation Army Harbor Light, and he was leaving from the Harbor Light in 1992, him and a friend of his, and someone approached him and was like, you know, I want to sell you some dope. And my cousin, you know, he's pretty big. He's small when he's smoking, but he's big when he's not smoking. And so it was very clear to him that I'm recovering and I'm good. So he told this cat that. And the cat was like, no, I'm going to make you do this. I'm going to make you buy this. My cousin was like, you ain't going to make me do anything. And so he pushed this cat back. But what he didn't know, and you know, that's sort of our male machismo sort of energy, he didn't know when he pushed this cat back that there was three other cats behind him. This is the important part of the story. And so when my cousin pushed this guy off of him and let him know we don't play like that, he was shot in his back. And he lay on the street dying after he was shot in his back. Now, it's interesting. I need to say to that shot in the back, he is one of the very few people, and I'm talking about 1992, that have ever been shot in Skid Row. Contrary to what, you know, Steve Lopez and the LA Times and all of these folks tell you, my cousin was one of the very few people that was actually shot on Skid Row. And this is where community comes in. And so as my cousin lay dying on the street after being shot in his back, if we listened to the Times, we would believe that everyone scattered and no one gave a damn. However, it was the community that existed then, the community that exists now, that stabilized my cousin. It was the community that tracked down the shooter and held the shooter until the police department came and picked them up. It was this community. I mean, it was a community that held the shooter down, and it was this community that gave me my cousin back. The crazy thing about it is this happened right under this large mural that is on Fifth Street. Now, on this mural, you see the luminaries of Black history. So, you know, at that time, Malcolm was there and Harriet Tubman was there and, you know, you name it, they were on that mural. And so he lay dying under that mural, but the community saved him. And for me, the bell went off. This is a community. This community, you know, what do we say? The need is the cradle of invention. This community has existed under some of the most oppressive conditions and still flourishes culturally and creatively. But what was missing? Leadership has always existed, but a vehicle by which to push ideas that are organic to people in the community did not. Because when you looked around this community, it was largely led by white men who were, quote unquote, volunteering after they left the corporate world. But they were volunteering to salaries to the tune of $190,000, $200,000, $250,000. I don't know about you, but that's a high-paid-ass volunteer. And so sort of those ideas were the things that were put out there. And I told you, how long do I have? Because I got a little bit.
One ding.
One ding? All right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was very important at that point that a new model of leadership and organization emerged. Now, this is the point where I must say that there is nothing of note in history that has been created by one person. There is nothing of note. And so, you know, I sort of cringe when I listen to the title of founder. There were many founders of the Los Angeles Community Action Network. Now, I could be dreamer. I would take that. But in terms of founder, that wasn't just me. That was a whole lot of folks in the community that said, you know what? We are suffering the problems of this community and other communities on a daily basis. And in our suffering, we also have or harness the ability to understand the solutions and are willing to fight for them, I always mention that one person of note thing because I'm always, like for me, my gift is history and Black history in particular. And I think about the civil rights movement, and most people think that it was Dr. Martin Luther King who was the architect of the civil rights movement, as if there were no other folks. But what most people don't know or understand, and this is important to me, is that it was Bayard Rustin, a gay communist Black cat who, the eve before the March on Washington, was snuck out of a church in a trunk that was driven away and removed and erased from the pages of history. And so for me, yes, I'm a dreamer, but there are many founders. The Debbies, the Beckys, the General Dogons, the folks who are on the front lines, the 650 members, those are the individuals that's pushing the line for human rights, that's pushing against the idea that public safety means simply 55 more police officers to the tune of $6 million to police 50 square blocks of Skid Row. That's not our idea of public safety, especially when you juxtapose that to the city of Los Angeles spending $5.7 million on homeless services in the entire 459 square miles of Los Angeles. $6 million for 50 blocks? $5.7 for 459 square miles? Something's wrong with that picture, right? Is something wrong with that picture? Okay, I'm like, I thought I was here by myself for a second. So the community is like, no, we have our ideas of what public safety means. Public safety means housing, jobs, employment, opportunity. And when we get all those things, then we're truly safe.
Thank you. And now we're going to hear from OG.
Well, I was here yesterday, and I heard about the bell. So I took me some notes down. So if you see me looking at my notes, you know why I'm looking at the bell. But my name is Manuel Campito, and I am a resident of California, Los Angeles. I was born at White Memorial Hospital. And I chose to live in the community. You know, I chose to live on Skid Row. I like Skid Row. And I'm a local artist. I have my own publishing company, which is, you know, home base, so I live down here. It's a small little company. I mentioned that because I chose to live down here, and I'm an advocate for community. I'm an advocate for community change and community development. And everything I do is on that course. All my relationships, all my friendships, all my partnerships are based on community development. I'm referring to this right now because I'm talking about Skid Row, which is a neighborhood, which is a community. And one of the things that Pete mentioned, and I was talking not too long ago, words mean different things to different people. Community means to me family units and a place where children come. For the policies to be, when you read the report they have, community means single room occupancy. A place where no kids. I was talking, we was in a James Wood Community Center. No kids allowed. But it says community center. You're going to read on the news about these nice housing going up. And you're going to look on the news and you're going to see somebody talking about, oh, thank God I finally got a place to stay. It's single room. You're living right next to the mental health facility, which everybody know living by yourself is not healthy. So when you build an unhealthy community, you should look for unhealthy results. Okay, this is not the community we built. Like what people was indicating, this community has always been here. But they refuse to accept it as a community because they have a different definition of what a community is. They built it as a containment area. That's why they spend so much money. They get paid to do what they do. And you send your money to the service providers and the missions. You send your money there. We never see it. So you need to come see where your money. So other thing is, I wear a lot of hats. And so I agree with what P said about founding. We have OG's association. We don't even have a president. You know, I'm just a spokesperson for it. And so And this particular organization, which he said, we started after Y2K because we figured since the world didn't blow up, we might as well do something, you know. They said the world's coming to an end. We figured we'd be cool. So it didn't blow up, so we didn't have no choice. So we're dedicated to self-help. We're dedicated to empowerment and of the residents. And we're dedicated to creating our own programs. I don't like standing in lines, so I like to create my own lines. You know, I don't like the way I be treated when I'm in them lines. He'd be out there all day long. You know, they got a gentleman out there called Fowler Dollar. He give you $1, take you about 5 hours. You got to stand out there for $1, sweating and everything else. And y'all gave him that money, too. Also, I'm the chairperson for Skid Row Brigade Homeless Coalition. And we started, one day I was on the streets and I was thinking, like, he said, there's so many people down there. And I was like, man, if everybody pick up one piece of trash, Skid Row get clean. Then I looked around, there wasn't no trash cans. Okay, and when I went to the city asking for trash cans, they said, oh, gee, they ain't going to use no trash can. They're going to burn them up. They gave me 100 different excuses why we couldn't have a trash can. So I'm going, that's how I got involved with SCI. Because one day I went there, I said, well, I just really came to tell you I was going to put some trash cans on. I wanted to know if it was any kind of rules or regulations. They said, well, yeah, you might can go to jail for chaining the trash can up. And I was thinking, I've been to jail for a lot of stuff. Not no trash can, so I just told them, you'll see me at the trash can. I'm tying myself to the trash can, so come get me. So just so happened, one of the gentlemen was a city attorney. I had befriended him on some other stuff, and, you know, he know how I get sometimes. So he said, well, let me work with OG. We'll make it a special project. Okay, so, before that, they told me, well, no, OG, we're going to give you the trash can. Look, it's on the agenda. It was a trash can on it. It said $3,500 for one trash can. I was thinking, it'll take a long time for $3,500 trash can. I say we'll do it walk, talk, and dump his own self, you know, so... You know, they don't cover $5 up there, you know. So anyway, we went and got some trash cans and we painted on them. We let the people paint on them. Let them paint their own messages on them. And our trash cans sit on the streets with no chains, no nothing. Okay? And so we called it the Funky Trash Can Campaign because they wouldn't give us a funky trash can. We can't get that from you, nothing. Okay? And so that led to the Skid Row Brigade, which took on the task of cleaning up San Julian. And my good friend, General Jeff here, promoted Operation Facelift because he was telling me, Skid Row need a facelift. So that's what we called it, Operation Facelift. So, and we painted a mural out there because wherever you go, I don't care if you go to Florida, you go to Disneyland, you go to Anaheim, you go to Disneyland, you go to New Orleans, you go to Bourbon Street, every city has a place where it reflects the beauty of it. And if anybody have drove through Skid Row over the past 10 years or whatever, you've seen nothing but garbage. It was designed, just like it was designed to be a containment, it was designed to get your mind set to believe that the people on Skid Row ain't worth nothing. Also, I'm proud to say, you know, I'm a member of the Skid Row Artists Collective that took all the artists off of Skid Row and went down to Art Walk and showed there was a lot of gifted and talented people on there that never have been given the opportunity. You go down to Art, you see all these galleries. Do you know these galleries have never even looked at one portfolio of any artist on Skid Row? Okay, but they want to sell art. Some of the art I wouldn't buy no way anyway. So they need to look at some new stuff. So anyway, that's what I'm about. And I'm going to say this before I end. We do everything with zero funding. We don't get a dollar from nobody. I wish I'd get that $200. You know, we get no money. We take it right out of our own pocket and do what we got to do.
So I just want to reflect back some of the important ideas and words that came up in the presentations that you heard. And one is the importance of place and having a space where you can come and be safe, where you can come and express yourself, come and be connected. So the notion of place came up. The idea of connection and cohesion. And that humanity, the ability to connect to one another, came up over and over again. Leadership, creativity, over and over again. The notion of family, the idea of empowerment. And while nobody said this word, there was a lot of evidence of it, and that's initiative. So thinking about these things, as you think of the Skid Row community, I would ask each of you just to discuss among yourselves, what are your thoughts about the future of the Skid Row community? And anyone can start.
Yeah, I think the future of the Skid Row community is great. There is, when you look at the stage, when you look out in the audience, I'm looking at Mike Neely there, who should be on this stage today, the founder of HOP. It's always been a cradle of ingenuity and a place of resilience. And now there's organizing going on. And now people can articulate what it is that they demand from the powers that be. And so I believe that Skid Row is going to be quite nice, because we're going to continue what we're doing. We're going to continue to fight back. We're going to continue to make the powers that be responsive to the needs of those who they abandoned a long time ago. And they don't like that. They don't like when we demand stuff. But we don't really care about that.
Yeah, I agree with what he said, because we are a community. So anybody trying to have a community, want a healthy community, want a safe community, want a clean community. I spoke earlier about we try to do a beautification act on San Julian, which is the very hardest Skid Row. And I just had to say, a church moved in, I don't know what you call it, church, and just wiped it out. Just came in and wiped it out. Never connected with the community. And so we're, General came in, he was very upset, but we always been under attack. All that trash you ever seen on Skid Row came from different missions that came down there, saying they was here to help us, as though we don't have no God. You know, he just wiped out the mural, put the big cross on there, and the time in which we can come get saved. Okay? And that's real. But we always been under attack like that. And when we talk to the city and we talk to LAPD, they arrest us for throwing a cigarette butt on the ground. Say we littering. And they come in there and dump on us all the time. You know, I hear people say, I hate Skid Row, I'll be glad when I go. People put them on buses from Chicago and all them clothes places and send them out here. I wish they'd go right back too. So a lot of people come in our community, they don't think it's no community, they don't respect it in the community, and they mistreat it. You know, so that's one of the problems. But what Pete said, we're going to fight back. We have no problem with fighting back. We know we're a community. And, you know, I get very upset every time I see one of them SROs going up. Single room. Who want to live by themselves? And then tell you, oh, thank you very much. You got a place to stay. You can get that in Twin Towers. Okay.
There's an art project that somebody started in New York. He was from out of the country, and it's just a classic. And it was all about bringing energy to the street. And he placed 60 pianos all around the city, and they were all painted, and they were just there for anybody to play. Well, you know, imagine 60 pianos in Skid Row. You plant those all around there. You talk about some energy and people connecting. That's immediate. You bring 60 pianos down there. I guarantee you're going to have more singing and more happening down there that's just going to be like what's happening in living rooms all across the country. But out on the street. That's one project right there, just a thought.
Well, you know, I think at the foundation of all of this really has to be a recognition, first of all, that the city kind of made a mistake, and that's to our advantage in some way, that there's no place else in the city that will have the population that is in Skid Row. And so everyone who is poor and homeless and jobless, everyone who is very, very, very low income is going to come to Skid Row. And they're not going to... I agree with this recognition that the Skid Row, the people on Skid Row, the community is resilient, and that there is a kind of, you know, profound ability to suffer, and they have suffered a great deal. But here's the thing: they're not going to go anywhere. They're not going to go anywhere. And as much as the developers and as much as the politicians and as much as the police might want them to go somewhere else, and as much as the police harass them and try to get them off the streets, and they've done an amazing job at getting people to kind of disperse, but everybody still comes back for services and housing and meals, and because that's the only, it's the only place people can come. So for me, that's kind of the foundation, and I particularly believe that, you know, I really appreciate the work of LA Can. I believe they're on the front lines, because I believe that the front line of the battle on for very, very poor people is on Spring Street and Main Street, where the vast majority of housing is, and that housing is in danger of being lost to developers. And I thank Pete White and Becky and others at LA Can for leading the fight to save that housing, because I think that's where the real battle is. Thank you.
So, as I said earlier, there's a surprise birthday party for me, and it's a surprise that I know about, so I'm going to have to duck out. But I'm just going to say this. I'm going to say this in closing, that we understand the war, just like the war on drugs was not a war on drugs. It was a war on people.
Amen.
We understand that the war on Skid Row, like other wars, is about resources. It's about land and money.
That's right.
And we also understand that the creativity of people has fought and organized to ensure we're not going anywhere. Community residents fought for housing protections, the strongest in the history of Los Angeles. Now, this was poor folks who did this. The strongest housing protections in the city of Los Angeles that are now protecting those residential hotels. I think we have to be very clear when we talk about Skid Row. When we listen to the LA Times and Steve Lopez, we believe that the 80,000 people in the county of Los Angeles live in Skid Row. Nothing can be further from the truth. It's a largely housed community with 3,500 transitional housing opportunities and shelter beds, but there's also 8,500 permanent housing opportunities. So we need to be clear, as OG was saying, to define our space our way, not to allow them to suck us in with the language that they use, not allowing them to demonize and criminalize the entire community, but for folks to open their hearts and their ears and understand that it's a place worth saving, and folks are fighting every day in their own way to save it. We need all y'all who's in the room tonight listening and talking and hearing these stories to join in that fight, to join in saving the site of resiliency. That's what we're talking about, because the residents ain't going nowhere. All power.
Happy birthday.
I agree.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, sir.
Yeah, he has to leave. I wanted to pick up on that, on what Pete just shared about resiliency and the community being there. Join us, sure. The community being there, not going anywhere, and I'm remembering in a project that John and I did together last year, and several of the people on the panel were involved, where we were talking about the cultural assets of Skid Row, and what came up out of a lot of interviews and focus group discussions and then a community meeting was this notion that Skid Row needed rebranding, that there was a need to present the community as a community rather than something that it's been represented as in the media and from outsiders who don't know necessarily what's going on in that space. So what would it take? What would it take to change the concept of Skid Row in Los Angeles?
Hello, is this the one thing that I learned and experienced through the Cultural Communication Center that I was very involved in day to day is that when people are actively involved with the tools that are provided, people from outside of the community, and a lot of people were coming in from outside of the community and from the city hall and from other sides of the city, and teenager and just all ages were coming in. And I really think that if the tools are provided, what happens is those talents are seen, and somebody comes in from another area and they go, you know, you really got a great writing ability. Say the word processor is available in the person's writing, and the musician is really doing his thing, or the spoken word, the poet or the artist, and this kind of stuff. What happens is when people from outside of the community, they see that and they get to know them in an environment from day to day, in an environment that is almost a semblance of home, then with that kind of environment, they go, you know something, why don't you come over to where we're at, over in Topanga Canyon, whatever. We want to see your skills put to a test in our environment here. It's working right here. Let's see. And I really don't think that just because the people are in that area, they're there for life, or they always have to come back there. If the tools are provided, if you've got a sewing machine there, and somebody doesn't have the money to use get a sewing machine, and they go in there, and boy, they can do stuff that equals anybody in the film industry. And somebody comes over and they go, "You made that? Yeah. Wow. What else can you do? Wow. Hey, come here. We'll pay you X amount, man. This is beautiful stuff. We like all of this and the other." And all of a sudden, the person might actually be out of that area, maybe for a temporary period of time, maybe forever, because all of a sudden, they're going to the next level in life. So my bottom line is that when the tools are provided, you never really know what kind of talents can be seen by those from outside of the area.
If I could take a minute, could I say
sure,
something
please.
That really hasn't been said? And for those who don't know, I'm Mike Neely, and I founded the Homeless Outreach Program back in 1980-whatever. Because I'm not going to tell anybody I'm old, so I don't want you guys to get the wrong impression. But the one thing that hasn't been talked about, and I think is a very, very important relative to understanding Skid Row as a community, is that you take a community of color, number one, that is basically dominated by men, and then you have a whole series of violence that goes on. You add drugs to that mix, and guess what? Everybody begins to get the impression that this is the worst place in the world. Now, let's break this down a little bit. Yes, it is a community of color, but the problem is that it's always been a community of color. It's been a community of color since the 1800s. The second part of it is that it's been dominated by men simply because of the fact that the transient nature of the community. The violence. Oh, let's talk about the violence. The violence of the community. This is the only community that has been attacked. And I want to emphasize attacked by the Los Angeles Police Department on numerous occasions. Whether we go back to Justiceville, whether we go to Daryl Gates bringing in his squad of police to break up Adams Camp, whether we go to the Safer Cities Initiative, those attacks, those violence have been perpetrated on the community basically by the Los Angeles Police Department. So the myth of violence is what we were living with, not the violence in reality. Because the reality is that Central Police District, historically, is one of the safest police districts in the entire city of Los Angeles. Right. And a lot of people have never realized that. I would always tell students from UCLA that you are in much more danger on the west side than you are in Skid Row. Now, the problem may be your car might get broke into, But you yourself have no problems. So we've got that we've had to deal with for all of these years. And then the other thing about it is that folks didn't want to recognize anything except for a negative connotation. There was not a recognition of the art that was going on. The art projects have been going on for, 30 years, Jeff? We've been dealing with arts and artists. The art district really grew out of Skid Row art. So when we start looking at historically what has been there, we have to begin to understand that until we get the real story out, people are going to have the wrong kind of impression. And this is the kind of forum where we need to get the right stories out. And that's the issue that's been going on. One more point that I'd just like to make quickly, and that is when you talk about communities, and Jeff started talking about it, but all of the organizations in Skid Row kind of have some relationship, kind of have some kind of intertwining. Individuals who, you know, who worked at one place, went to work for another place, did something. There's been cooperative ventures and partnerships and issues that have gone on for many, 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 many years. Those were some of the things that helped to build a provider community. I think out of that provider community, there was also the camaraderie for the individuals who worked and lived down there. And that is something that hasn't been recognized a lot. There are not a lot of people that you can tell me that worked on Skid Row or lived on Skid Row that I don't know or I haven't heard about or whatever may be the case. And that's something that's really, really important. And I think it's unique to the community of Skid Row.
Thank you for adding that. I want to open it up to the audience so they could be get your input and it could be a broader discussion. Does anyone have a comment or question? And if you could just stand up and say your name and whatever else you want to share about yourself.
My name is General Jeff. I'm a community activist for Skid Row. I'm also on the board of directors for the Downtown Los Angeles Neighborhood Council. And based on my actions and my efforts and what I do, I'm a newbie compared to these guys. These guys got decades in. I'm like 3 years in, so I'm like a newborn baby. But, you know, I admire these guys, and I'm learning just as a lot of you all are too. But I just want to say that, you know, I basically work closely with OG, and we've started a lot of grassroots organizations, and we started a positive movement. And so I just wanted to come out in the open that through our positive movement, we basically don't have a headquarters. And so, you know, with the discussion tonight being about the need for arts, an outlet for arts, through a headquarters, some type of cultural center, it would be so perfect for our positive movement in terms of like a breeding ground for positive energy to spread throughout the rest of the community. And so because of the individuals that are here and the individuals that are now currently me and even the ones that are coming behind me, you know, we need that headquarters, so to speak, so that we can give birth to even more positive creativity. Thank you.
What are they going to do with Downtown Women's Center?
Let him go first. He's close. Hi, my name's Michael, and I live on 5th and Main. I'm a new resident in downtown, and so it's been a really interesting experience because I live in a single room. I pay $832 a month for my single room, and I'm happy to have my own little place. But I've tried to connect with community, and I take many, many, many long walks around the whole neighborhood from the library here, but also going the other direction. And to understand, you know, what the situation is. And I was born here in L.A., and I knew Skid Row always existed, but to really be part of the community now and to see what problems, what issues are there, the homeless who have to sleep, but the lucky people who get to sleep indoors. But I guess for me as a resident, new resident, the hardest part is, again, sanitation facilities for people who don't have a place. And it's really, really hard because, again, a community, as you all just said, is your home and how you keep it And you go to any other community, you know, Beverly Hills community or whatever, and you're not going to, you know, have the same problem of people needing to use the sidewalk because they have no sanitation facilities. And I just don't know what you all think, but again, there's not enough facilities for the people, for the population, and that's, I think, the number one situation we're all facing is you walk around, and all my friends don't want to visit me because they said, oh, it all smells like, you know, like shit and urine, excuse the expression, but that's what they all say, why they don't want to come visit me, and it is a big issue that I want to bring out tonight. Thank you.
Does anybody want to respond to that?
I'd like to respond to that. Again, you got to remember this was a design community. You know, everything was designed. So you're living in a community of two worlds because it's very true. My brother and my daughters don't even want to come visit me because of what they've heard and what they see, you know. And I remember when they were building the loft and everything, you know, I got a good relationship with a lot of people that live in the loft. But for a long time, it's been the media and the politicians and the police between us. So one of the things that needed to be done, and we offer tours on Skid Row, is come down and see for yourself. Okay, see the problem for yourself. Quit listening on the news. Come, you know, call us up and come visit for yourself. And then we can partnership on reshaping it. And you don't have to be paying it. Then you can go to the mayor's office and tell him, no, it's not like that. You can go to your senator, your congressman, whoever else, you know, your churches. You know, because like I said, one of the biggest problems we have is with churches coming down. They just come down, dump, they throw their clothes out the window. Talking about drive-by, they do drive-by with food. You got to be ducking for food, you know. So that myth that people are starving on Skid Row, that's a myth, okay? And so, again, you got the majority of people that are living on Skid Row on the street are not even from California. They're from Chicago, you know, all these Florida and everything. So when they get out here, and they were doing what they were doing here back there. So people just kindly escorted them to the bus station and said, there's a place out there called Skid Row. Go there. And so we end up getting everybody else's problems, and that's what you see. Because, again, the homeless people, yeah, it's a lot of homeless, but it's a lot of residents down there. And that's what people don't understand. They just think everybody's homeless. No, there's a lot of people living there. And we have to walk out and look at somebody peeing on the street and defecating. No, I don't want to see it. Okay?
Well, let's talk about the
toilets. Wait a second.
Okay, Jeff.
Let me just say, we spent a 10-year campaign trying to getting... succeeding in getting porta potties, 30 porta potties on Skid Row.
Mm-hmm.
And I consider that a great humanitarian achievement, one of the greatest achievements of our Catholic worker community and the people that helped us. So I want to make sure that you understand that people are peeing and defecating on the street because they don't have any other place to go, and the city took away the bathrooms that were already there because they were unsightly. Yes, they were being used for drug dealing and prostitution, but they were also being emptied twice a day. So all of that pee and urine, where is it now? Well, it's going down the drain to the Santa Monica Bay and to Long Beach. So, let's just be clear. When we talk about rebranding, we have to be careful because, you know, if you rebrand it too well, then we're at war. You have to remember, we're at war. If you make it too nice down there, then the opposition will have succeeded. That's my feeling personally. And I don't want to rebrand so much that it all looks like, oh, well, isn't this the great Skid Row arts community? No, it's a place where poor people live, and it's a place where the only place that poor people are allowed to congregate. And it's a terrible place, I agree with you, but if you start rebranding, the only reason we're keeping developers out is because is not all that attractive to people. So just be careful as we start to rebrand that you don't make it too attractive so that the developers are able to take over. That's all I want to say.
Thank you for bringing up that.
Well, I wanted to get into this right quick because I've been in this toilet fight for a long, long time. I didn't necessarily agree with the approach that Jeff and others took. I understood it. I was not in opposition to it. My approach was a little bit different. And my approach was, we've got all these people that are complaining about the toilets and individuals using the outside for the bathrooms. However, let's also understand, these same people are the people that have closed their buildings and not allowed anybody to go into their buildings to use the restroom. Something as humane and as civil as being able to go inside to use a restroom has been barred from most people that live on Skid Row. And that's not only the individuals who are developers and what have you. I'm talking about service providers, too. I'm talking about all of the businesses that did have restrooms, did have facilities available, but would not allow any person to come in off the street to use those facilities. So, you know, we've also had that as an issue for a long, long time. I think that it should have been dealt with, it could have been dealt with, but those individuals who were the business community and the residential community chose not to deal with it. The other fact of it is, too, is that, and I want to say this, because I walk around a lot of times now, I'm not sure if all of the defecation and urination that's out there is human. Because, well, I got seeing a lot of dogs running around now. So, you know, if we're gonna really and truly get into this, let's get into it totally and completely, you know, from where the perspective is.
Let me just be mindful of the time. Ogieto, you have something to say, but I also want to have the opportunity to have other people in the audience say something. Og, just make your comment, and then we
He right about that one point, because the horses dump on Skid Row. Police. But also, we were doing a mural, and this was not typical. The guy was peeing on the street, on the mural. We doing a mural. And I cleaned the streets up because women and kids got to walk down the street. Yeah. And let me tell you something. All the missions keep their stuff open. The Midnight Mission is open all day long in the Union, all night long. And General Jeff led the crusade to put a porta one of them toilets right across the street from your place. It's open all the time. And if you got to use the bathroom, unless you got a bladder problem, you know pretty much when you got to use it. So it ain't but a few blocks down. But the guy told me, I've been peeing on this wall for 10 years. That was his excuse. And he was right around the corner from the Midnight Mission. Bathroom was right across the street from him. He said, I've been peeing on this wall for 10 years. And that's his attitude, because they've created this mentality down on Skid Row. You know, you can just do what you want to do. But the horses even crap on the street.
But I think in this discussion about sanitation and other things, there is revealed, though, a lot of complexity. There's a lot of complexity from the residents to people who are coming into the community to the powers that be and the roles that they play in stewardship of place and how people care about place or not. Let's take two more. Well, we have several. So why don't we go here, 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 and here? Okay. Ma'am? Yes.
My name is Jeannie Black, and I live in Pico Union, and I was invited here tonight by my friend that I've known for a long time from Hollywood. I lived in Skid Row many years ago for about a minute, and I wasn't there very long, okay? I didn't have a very good experience while I was there either, but I learned a lot of things very quickly. What I want to say is that I am excited to be here to hear you all speak about the possibilities of Skid Row, not only for the area that we call the containment, but because it represents what's happening in the rest of the city right now as well, between developers and families with affordable housing for the children who are the future leaders of this city, because it's really not about us anymore. It's about them. And we have to be aware how many are actually homeless that we have dealt with for years, trying to come up with funding and housing and health care and all of the things that equal opportunity to everyone who calls this a company town. We have all the smoke and mirrors and central casting available to make this impact felt throughout not only this city, but the rest of the world, because we are the beginning and the end of everything. We are the rainbow people, and if we don't get it right, nobody gets it right. So carry on. Thank you for listening. But remember, it goes through the whole city, what's going on right now. The impact is felt everywhere, and it's the children who are suffering. So let's remember them when we think about how much money we're offering to place in all of these situations that we think we're being such a help to everybody. And the arts is the answer, so get it on. I want to see the pianos out there. I'll be there.
There was
That gentleman right there.
I'm Jim McQuiston. In my area, well, I've talked, first of all, with John Lewis, the civil rights leader, and he proclaims that Los Angeles is the most segregated city he's ever been in. And that is not just from black and white, but it's also rich and poor. Mm-hmm. I've talked to some people who say they would never go east of Fairfax Avenue, for example. So Skid Row is a concept, but what people are missing is talking with people with Skid Row and finding out, gee, they're people. And why don't we have some people like those people in our neighborhoods? Now, we have a new housing law, which supposedly, SB 1818, which supposedly says that you have to have some poor people if you want to build a housing complex. Why don't we have those out on the west side, for example? We don't. We can't even get them downtown. We've had developers downtown saying, over my dead body. So there is this concept of segregation in Los Angeles. It's slowly being broken down, but I imagine it's going to be several more generations unless we all get together and say, look, enough is enough. We've got to mingle.
Thank you. There were two more comments, and unfortunately we're going to have to close up because of time.
There's one up here.
Sorry? Okay, good. So there was one, two, and then we're going to go here. Is this gentleman here? Over here, this gentleman had wanted to speak.
Gentleman up there.
I just wanted to ask you guys on the panel, if you, within your longtime experience, when you look at the organizations, the big foundations, the philanthropy, the religious organizations that pour so much time and effort into Skid Row, how much of that is poured into sort of pity, charity, versus how much of that could be and do you think ought to be poured into community development, opening up small business opportunities on Skid Row, giving people, instead of continually this putting them in this place of need and keeping them sort of isolated in these little boxes, but putting out funding, government funding and foundation funding to give the community what it needs, places to shop, and that are owned by the people in the community.
Excellent.
Well,
how much of that?
If someone could just respond briefly, and then we can...
Well,
none.
Well, the whole thing about it is there's been a ton of money that's been poured into Central City East, and you've got a lot of control by the business community and their associations, the Central City East Association, the Central City Association, et cetera, et cetera. They've got powerful lobbyists and all kinds of things. I agree with you. There should be some microloan programs, some other kinds of programs that would help individuals to start their own small businesses. I don't see that happening because I don't see the political will or the individuals who are willing to take that kind of risk at this point in time.
Let me just say that I think that religious organizations are notoriously bad at business, and so I also want to say, as much criticism as I have of missions, they're really helpful. So I would prefer to take that money from the police department and defund the 50 cops that are on the street and the $5 million a year that we spend on that, and just start there. That's where I would start. So.
We have here and then one more comment.
My name is Kevin Michael Key, and I'm a member of the LAPD. I don't know why y'all so anti-police up there. However, the LAPD that I'm a member of is the poverty department. Basically, I got a comment. The comment is that there's a lack of respect what OG talked about, the horse poop, I'm being nice, Maria. You know, we were sweeping the streets as part of our Skid Row advocates, and we were heading west on 6th Street, and these horse cops, you know, like cowboys, and there were some big old policemen, too, walked by us as part of their safer cities, and they saw us with these, and I mean, we were highly visible. It was about 10, 12 of us on both sides of the street, you know, and they started plopping right behind the area we just swept. And, you know, I'm fairly vocal, so I said, hey, man, you know, what you doing? And they said, well, it's more, it's safer than the human debris. But they saw us cleaning up. And that lack of respect for the humanity, a lack of sensitivity for our efforts starts at that low level, mm-hmm. but as you go further and further up the ladder, like this project right here, where we're trying to honor these community visionaries, you'd be surprised how one person and the roadblocks that come up. So what we're talking about, what we are demanding, is respect for the ideas and the solutions. Because who better than me knows what I need? And so we see, and I'll be finished, Maria. You know, we see these multi-million dollar institutions, and they actually have tour buses that they drive through our community, pointing out the misery so that they can get the funding to do what they do without hearing our voices, our pain, and our real needs. So that's why programs like this, pushing the people who know best the needs that we have and how our voices can be heard. Thank you.
Good evening, my name is Chaz Jackson. I'm from the East Coast and never experienced this kind of thing that I've had experience here in Los Angeles, California. I was appalled when I came here to see such disrespect of humanity, and I decided to join a group called LAPD, Los Angeles Poverty Department. It's a performing arts company by John Malpede, and I met many people that found the need to reach out to people in helping them in developing their gift, and I was very surprised to see that there were people in Skid Row that live the way they lived, and especially with women, I was very shocked to see that in Skid Row, at the time when I lived here, or when I moved here in 1968, there were no women in Skid Row to speak of. And then, as the decades went by, there were women, which shocked the heck out of me. There were men only, and I'm so glad to see that the people who care are now opening up housing for women and children, which didn't exist when I came here, and it's I think it's a great progress. Also, to I decided to stay on Skid Row for a little bit. I lived on the west side and had a nice place there, and being a humanitarian myself, I wanted to see what I could do and how I could contribute to such the despair. So when I came down here to live on Skid Row, I wanted to learn exactly how this kind of thing came about. When I came here, it was more of truckers area, where there's a lot of warehouses and hotels for truckers. It wasn't for families at that time, and then things became worse, and I learned a lot from Skid Row. Most people come and run away. I stayed. I was concerned about the people that were here, and so I joined a group called Los Angeles Poverty Department, an acting a company, and we basically try to reach out to the community in our arts, in expressing how we feel about the community and how we can help them. And I'm very grateful that I came to Skid Row, and I hope I can do more in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. So please join me in thanking the panelists for sharing today. And thanks to you for being an engaged audience, and I want to encourage you, if you're inclined, to support the Library Foundation of Los Angeles that puts on these kinds of events. I wish you a good evening, and drive home or walk home safely. Thank you.
Aloud Audio is produced by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles and made possible through support provided by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, Righteous Persons Foundation, City National Bank, K&L Gates, KPMG, the Bujakji Foundation, Susan and David Rosenblum, Wallace Foundation, and Donna and Martin J. Wolf. Media support provided by KPCC 83.9 FM, KUSC 91.5 FM, and public television station KCET. Additional support provided by the Council of the Library Foundation and individual Library Foundation members. A loud theme composed by Larry Karish.